10 changes, and it doesn't look like anything we proposed. The social science building. But it's now the psychology building, as a matter of fact. But as I said, it went through about 10 changes, and it's nothing like we had originally planned. But we were happy to get anything at that time.
Now, is that the one that is now called the Social and Behavioral Sciences? With the,
no, that Social and Behavioral Sciences is the new building, the one at
nearby
the chemistry building.
Yes,
that's right, near the biology building.
The building that you planned, was where was that?
Well, let's see. As you walked from the administration, you walked out of the administration, it was on the left-hand side. It was a building with a courtyard. It was built around the courtyard.
Two buildings.
Connected with it by a bridge. That's right.
Next to the old biology building.
Next to the old biology
right.
building, precisely.
Right.
Yes. Yes. Now then,
classrooms in one building and offices in the other.
That's right. There were classrooms and labs in one building and offices in the other.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, later on, when I became vice president for liberal studies, when I used to accompany John and Sidney, and Herb, and Alec Pine, to Albany for budget hearings.
You want to describe how the hearings went and what individuals you dealt with?
The names are going to be difficult for me to remember because I was only vice president for about 2.5 years. And so my contact with them was not as...
Was Harry Porter still there?
Harry Porter was there, yes.
He was still there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, wait a minute. Now, was he there when I was vice president? No, I don't believe so. But I knew Harry Porter from the early days. Now, I can't recall. I think that were all the people. If you mentioned the names, I'm sure I would know them.
Charlie Foster?
Yes, he was there.
He was there.
Again, I don't recall. Now,
he was in the business.
Yeah. But the Bureau of the Budget was primarily, of course, those were the days when the Bureau of the Budget was running Stony Brook.
All right. Norm Herd.
Yes.
Was director.
That's right.
And under him, I've interviewed Norm, and I have in the notes the names of two people. I wish I could recall.
I'm sure those are the people. I'm sure I remember those people, but again, I can't recall the names. In fact, I should not have left out. Axelrod was one, yes.
Yeah.
A member of the group later on that accompanied us always to Albany was Pellegrino, because those were the days when the medical school was there. I was on the committee, the first university committee for the planning of the medical school. But Pellegrino was also... you asked how did the hearings go. Well, the greatest performances were given by John Toll, of course. There was no question about that. And Pellegrino.
That was a pretty high-powered duo.
Yeah, that's right. It made you wonder sometimes who was running the university, whether it was John Toll or Edmund Pellegrino. But they were both of them were very, very impressive. John, especially. I have never heard anybody like that. And I suspect that Herb has probably told you that half the time they gave John what he wanted just to get rid of him. I found that rather amusing. You know, he knew how to make himself obnoxious in a thoroughly unobnoxious way. He was in a sense, I thought of him as somewhat naive socially, but tremendously effective as a tactician. And I often used to wonder whether or not that social naivete was put on so that he would be more effective. It was amazing. He was always pulling all sorts of social gaffes, but in fact, getting what he wanted. There's no question.
He was persistent. He was logical. He marshaled his back
figures. Incredible. In the way a physicist would deal with numbers. He and Alec, I used to marvel. I used to get at watching. Just incredible. And I had no facility for this kind of thing, nor any love for this kind of thing. But I used to watch them in absolute awe when they with their numbers.
They were a good pair.
They certainly were. Mm-hmm. No question about that. Well, let's see now. We go on to the.
You've got support, willing or reluctant.
For whom?
From the central office.
Always rather reluctant. I found that's one of the biggest tragedies, and I still think it continues to be, is that they had in John Toll and in the rest of us people who were willing to work night and day to create a university. And I think initially they gave us pretty much what we wanted. There was no question about that. And then the honeymoon period was over, and then it was just terrible. And I think the tragedy is that the university at Stony Brook has been neglected. And I think that this neglect is now beginning to take its toll. You know, I have the impression that, I don't know the central administration, but certainly the Bureau of Budget wasn't really interested in the State University of New York. They were interested only insofar as they had to be interested, and all they saw was a big drain as far as funds were concerned. And I still feel, to this day, that except for Rockefeller, the governors have not been very, very happy about the State University of New York in general, and Stony Brook in particular. And I don't know, maybe it's because we don't have any graduates
in the state government, that's true. I think Harriman understood.
Yes.
And was, I was impressed with the early personnel in the local council. But that declined. The quality of the people declined.
Well, also, they were terribly inexperienced. It was a local council.
Yes.
They knew nothing about universities. They tried their best. They knew what they wanted. But we really needed experienced people at that time.
Right. You didn't really have the kind of outside help, either in the local council or the trustees.
That's right. Precisely. And to that's why I think that if anybody is to give them, if any single person is to give them credit, was John Toll. He had so little to work with locally. And it was amazing what he was able to really pull off.
I think as far as the Health Sciences Center, people like H.B. Dennison and the local legislators tilted the scale in our favor.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of the that the Mule Commission report came out on the Health Sciences Center.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Meadowbrook wanted to overturn the recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was quite a battle between Suffolk and Nassau.
Mm-hmm.
We got support. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. Well, let's see. What do I feel we had accomplished at Stony Brook by 1971? Well, by 1971, we already had a graduate program in force. We must have had at least half of the faculty, which meant we had about anywhere between 20 and 30 faculty members. People began to talk about Stony Brook when I went to meetings. Professional meetings, which of course is what artist. And I used to get telephone calls from individuals who wanted to join us at Stony Brook. So that was very encouraging. Well, by 1971, we had a fully established graduate program going, well known. And I think that most of us began to sit back and say, well, now, what are we going to do is for the undergraduate program? That's always a difficult decision, because it means you have to bring in people who are interested in undergraduate work. And I must say, we were successful, I think, but hadn't been as successful as we could have been in that respect. Again, people say, well, you know, you neglected the undergraduate program. I don't think we neglected it. I don't think we gave it the emphasis that we would have in a graduate program. And I think that was done intentionally. You build up a good graduate program, and people want to come to the university, both undergraduates and graduate students. So you get good undergraduate students because they want to be psychologists. They know that you have a good graduate program. And therefore, not necessarily, but in our case, I think a good... we are students. We have been placed at a lot of very good universities. We're very proud of our graduates as well as undergraduates.
Where are they gone?
Rutgers, Stanford, Illinois. There have been a lot of appointments at Southern universities who have now begun to build up their departments of psychology. What has happened, of course, is that psychologists especially, in both experimental and clinical, good psychologists are now a guy in the dozen. So the universities, like Southern universities, for example, who have begun to build up in Florida and Georgia, have been hiring. North Carolina, for example, not UNC, but the one at Charlotte, have begun to hire students like ours. Yes, and Greensboro, yes.
Bill Moran is now a...
That's right, yes. We sent a couple of students to Greensboro, and they're beginning to build very good departments of psychology because they themselves were so good. And because there are so many psychologists, now the jobs have become premium and difficult to get. So I think that's pretty much what we had accomplished. I think by that time, by 1971, a lot of the faculty had research grants. They were pulling in a lot of federal money at that point. By 71, by 75, they had over $1 million, I think, in research grants in the department. Yes, I think so, too. And we had a very good group. They liked being at Stony Brook, and we liked having them there.
Do you keep in touch with them? What is who's the present chairman?
The present chairman is the former chairman of the university, from the Department of Psychology at Buffalo. And again, my sip of a memory.
Katkin,
thanks. Ed Katkin, who is interested, a clinical psychologist who is interested in physiological processes, and from what I understand is doing an admirable job. Like, I'm really pleased because I think that as difficult as it is now, he's going to really build up the department. As long as people like O'Leary stay there, they'll be all right. Well, I think I've already done that pretty much, haven't I? Named individuals who did things who were important. The names that come to mind are the names that you know already, the people who were really at the forefront of activities there. John Toll, Tom Irvine,
Sydney, Galba.
When I came in 62, the faculty was split. And the students were anti-administration.
You came at a very, very difficult time. And only somebody with your iron nerves could have handled that situation. You had to have no autonomic nervous system.
Well, I remember two people coming into the office a couple of weeks after I'd been there, telling me confidentially and quite forcefully that unless I fired this guy, this guy, the whole place was going to go downhill. Both of them are still there. Both of the people are still there. One of them was Sydney.
Is that right? Well, you know, Sydney was...
They wanted fired. This guy wanted
fired. Oh, this guy wanted Sydney fired. Oh, yes.
Sydney fired, and he wanted Martin Travis.
Oh, I can tell you the name of the individual who came to see you.
Yeah?
Sure. Robert Sternfeld.
Yes. How did you know that?
Because I know Sternfeld very well. I mean, I don't know him in a sense, not a friend of mine. But I actually was sitting in an office one day listening to Sternfeld coaching a student on how to disrupt things on campus. So that, yeah. Well, I don't know that that's, it wasn't really, everybody was doing all of these mad things, you see. But he was telling the students, you know, not how to disrupt things on campus, I wouldn't say that, but how to, what side he should be on.
I guess.
And people were taking sides,
yeah.
No question about that. But I suppose there were people on the anti-Chicago side who were as involved in these things as the Chicago people were. It was a mad time.
I don't think they were quite as, they weren't arguing ad hominem as much.
No. No, that's true. That's true. There wasn't much of that on the... I was, at first, absolutely bewildered by what was going on. I suspect I was terribly naive. But then it became readily apparent. They reported... as a matter of fact, this is when I met Harry Porter. They reported that I was moonlighting. Somebody reported to the Newsday that I was moonlighting. So the newspaper called me, and the reporter wanted to know all about this.
In the middle of the night.
And I told him that I wasn't going to make any statement until I saw a member from the administration, and then that member would make a statement. And Harry Porter was coming down the next day and asked to see me because he had also been contacted by Newsday. So I picked him up at someplace and drove him to Oyster Bay and had a little talk with him. And he asked me about this, and I said yes. Had I been teaching at Adelphi at the same time I'd been teaching it at the university, I said yes. And he asked me to explain. I said to him that when I was appointed, I told Olson that Adelphi had requested that I teach one course because they could get nobody to teach the course on analysis of angst, design of experiments. I'd just come out of Iowa where this was the current thing. And I asked Olson whether or not this would be all right. I told him that they were going to pay me for it. They were going to pay me for one course. And he said it was perfectly okay, that it would only be for one semester. And I told him that was the case. So I told this to Harry Porter. Harry Porter told the newsman at that point that it was perfectly all right. The administration knew about this, and that was a favor to Adelphi. So they really, it was a favor to a private institution, you see. That was a real ploy.
Mm-hmm.
But that was reported by one of the other people.
Yeah.
It was reported to the newspaper.
They were trying off the cases in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
The press.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But as I recall, you had been smart enough to get that in writing your permission for you to use that single course for that one semester. So he had that in his favor. And the Newsday reporters hounded us in the middle of the night. They never called during the day. They called at the quarter after 12. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It was real harassment. And they demanded to know why Harry was moonlighting. And it was not, say, are you, do you have permission? They just, it was really reporters at their very worst.
Added to the excitement, but I must confess that it was terribly disconcerting at the time. But that lasted, I think, until John Cole came in. Now, how long were you the acting?
From 62 to 65.
62 to 65.
And
3 years.
Yeah. And I was asked by Sullivan, Ted Sullivan, to go down and interview Johnny, to see if he would be.
Yes, I remember.
Interested. So I went down and interviewed him at his home, stayed overnight with him. And we discussed the job and the opportunities. And he asked me, aren't you interested in the job? How did he put it as a question? Why aren't you interested in the job? Well, I told him, frankly, that I was not interested. I had come as executive dean in the Albany office on detail to Stonywood for a year so they could find a president.
Yes.
And I was acting chief administrative officer and dean of arts and sciences, both. I couldn't keep the deanship because I had the top responsibility. I couldn't get rid of the top responsibility. I would have preferred to have been a dean, working with faculty and students and curriculum. And I saw enough in 3 years of the other administrative chores. I regarded them as chores. And I'm sure that I would not have done as good a job as Johnny in getting major buildings into the pipeline. I might have been able to get them into the pipeline, but pushing and fighting for them up in Albany, I don't think I would have been as... I might have been as persistent, but I wouldn't have been as resourceful as Johnny. And I wouldn't have been fundamentally as interested in structures, in police, in finances, as I was in curriculum. So I can be perfectly honest about it.
Well, it's hard to say, you know, Carl, what sort of a tactic would work. Johnny had his, and I'm sure you would have had your way of attempting to do things. And maybe they would have responded to less forcefulness on the part of an individual. But it's hard to say.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's very difficult to say.
Yeah.
But we do know that he was a forceful individual, and we do know, you know, not and made a pest of himself to.
Well, I remember one time I was talking with Larry Murray. I was arguing with something. And he says something to the effect, Carl, don't be so much in a hurry. Something of that, sir. I've interviewed him, Larry Murray.
Well, he would say that. I mean, I think that's the way they felt. All of us were in a hurry, and I think that they simply didn't see the urgency in Albany. Well, of course, the greatest mistake that was ever made was to have this institution run by the Bureau of the Budget, you know.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. It's really the greatest mistake.
We're almost at the end of the...
Oh, what was that, an hour?
60 minutes on a side. This is at the slow speed. There are two speeds.
Oh. Uh-huh. I don't know. I think that, as I said before, I think that it's been a very, it's to me, a very exciting experience. I often talk to Millie about
it. Was a very exciting,
a real rare opportunity.
Yeah. I remember I can't remember what year this is. There was a summer in Stony Brook when the physics department had a large number of visitors, some from Princeton, some from Brookhaven, and they were there. It seemed to be kind of an